Good morning, everyone. This is the meeting of the working group on the PDP for translation and transliteration of contact information. Thanks to those who are joining remotely. We'll be starting in just a few minutes just to give others a chance to join. Thank you. It might be hard to do. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the update on the translation and transliteration of contact information. This was to be a slot for a meeting of the PDP Working Group, that's the Policy Development Process Working Group, on translation and transliteration of contact information. However, the most important update for all of you, and welcome to those of you remotely, is that while we have a charter for the working group, the charter underwent some recent revisions, and it is now before the council with a motion for approval, and the council will consider it at its meeting on this Wednesday, the 20th of November. And at which point we are hopeful that the charter will be approved and we will form the working group. So this morning, on the 18th of November, we're holding this meeting to provide information to anyone who may be interested in this issue or who may be interested in joining the PDP working group. My name is Julie Headland, and I am with ICANN staff supporting this working group, and also with staff we have Lars Hoffman also supporting this group, who is waving. You can't see him. And I also should note this morning we are pleased to have with us the co-chairs of the charter drafting team. They drafted the charter for the working group that is now before the council. We have Chris Dillon and Rudy Vaznik, and welcome to you. And we have a few other people in the room here, and since we don't have many people here, perhaps I could ask people to just take a moment to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Peter Dernbach. I'm a member of the IP constituency, and I'm based in Taiwan, so I'm familiar with some of the translation and transliteration issues of contact information in different systems, in particularly in Chinese.
Welcome, Peter. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Wanawit Akubutra from Ministry of ICT, so I'm in the TAIGAC.
Thank you very much, and welcome.
Hi, good morning. My name is Steve Sang. I'm also an ICANN staff, colleagues of Julie's and Lars. My involvement in this area is there is another group called chartered by the WHOIS Review Team Implementation that is looking at determining the internationalized registration data requirements. So one of the things the two groups want to work closely and complementarily so that, you know, the issues are being addressed together in some way and to avoid, you know, overlap and such. So that's why I'm here this morning. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you very much, Steve, and welcome. Perhaps I'll just take a moment to update everyone on this issue that is being that is under consideration for this PDP working group that will be formed shortly. Referring to the slides that we have in the Adobe Connect room, this particular PDP addresses two issues that were identified by the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. That was a joint working group with participation from the GNSO and the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. And that group produced a report that identified several issues relating to the internationalization of registration data. And two of those that group called out for special consideration under a policy development process. And those two issues are, number one, who should local contact information be translated into one language, such as English, or should it be transliterated into one script, such as Latin? And number two, who should decide who should bear the burden to either translate or transliterate contact information? The IRD working group and the GNSO Council agreed that these were two issues that needed special consideration because they are fairly complex issues, and they were singled out thus for a separate policy development process. However, as Steve Sheng noted, there needs to be close coordination with other groups that are working on other aspects of who is or registration data, and in particular the internationalization of those data. And so the work of this PDP working group will feed into the expert working group that Steve is supporting, and will be considered along with other internationalization issues. Before I go on to the next slide, are there any questions about the two issues under consideration here? And I'm looking to the chat room as well to make sure we don't miss anybody there. Seeing and hearing none, I will move on to the next slide, status quo and next steps. As I noted, the charter drafting team has submitted the charter to the GNSO Council for consideration. It is to be considered at the Council's meeting on the 20th of November. Once the charter is approved, the ICANN staff will send out a very broad announcement to the GNSO community, to all of the supporting organizations in the advisory committees, asking for participants in the working group, and particular for those who have expertise in languages and scripts, in internationalization issues, in internationalized domain names, IDNs, and any of the aspects that may relate to this particular PDP. So there will be a wide call for participation, and then the working group will be formed, and the working group will reach out again to the supporting organizations and advisory committees to get input, and then the working group will draft an initial report. While I have Steve Sheng here, perhaps, Steve, I might ask if you want to say a little bit more about the issues that the expert working group is considering, if you can.
Thanks, Julie. So the expert working group chartered to implement WHOIS review team recommendations, in particular 12 to 13, are tasked with two things. One thing is to determine the requirements for internationalized registration data. And the second task is to create a corresponding data model that matches those requirements. We did a community-wide call for experts, I think earlier in June this year, and we have, I think in late October, the team was formed. Currently, it has 8 members with expertise in registry, registrar operations, linguistic, IDNA, policy, so and internationalization in applications. So the group has been working weekly, meeting weekly so far, and the group has just finished its charter, which I think, in the interest of cross pollination, Julie, if it's possible, we want to forward it to this newly formed PDP working group, so that we, the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. With respect to, there's another area of overlap. When the board tasks staff to implement WHOIS review team implementations, there is a specific task for staff to work in consultation with the community to do a study on the feasibility of today's available solutions for internationalized registration data service. So one part of that project that might be that will be useful, I think this is also aligned with the GNSO resolution when it passes, is to study the feasibility, the commercial feasibility of the translation and transliteration systems. That study will begin shortly. So the contract is in the process being finalized and is expected to take about 6 months. In fact, I have Mark Blanchett. Mark, if you want to come up here, introduce yourself a bit, who will be one of the researchers for this study. Thanks.
Welcome, Mark.
I wanted to be on the back. I'm now disclosed.
Yeah, so the study will, among other things, look at, you know, commercial feasibility of translation and transliteration systems. Other things we'll look at is the amount of information loss, you know, when things are translated or transliterated, and, you know, kind of the perceived cost versus the benefit of things that are currently available today. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. That's extremely helpful because one of the aspects of the charter is that the working group may look into the costs and the benefits of translation and transliteration of contact information. So I think that the results of the study could be extremely helpful for that. I want to, I'm cognizant that you need to leave shortly, Steve. I just want to ask if anyone has any quick questions for Steve. I know he has another meeting to go to. Rudy, go ahead.
Rudy speaking for the transcript. As you mentioned, the study will take 6 months. That means that it will take several months before our PDP working group would be able to have an indication of what the cost would be from view from that study, which is going to be quite important, as we revealed that in the discussions we had, that the registrars are eager to know. But in fact, they should be the indicator of what would be the cost and not the working group itself. Because if you allow it to be done by the working group, and we know that we will not have that many people around the table, it could give an indicator of cost that could be out of the ranges. So I'm just wondering, when we start this PDP working group, do we already have to consider that we have to take at least 6 months for our work in order to be able to capture, or do you think that there will be data coming earlier in the process before the end of the 6 months? I think that's quite important for the working group to know what the timeline is for us.
Thank you, Rudy. I hear two things just kind of play back. One thing, the question you raise is the data that the study provide will be important for the PDP deliberation, and you are wondering whether there is opportunity for early input regarding the data. Is that right? The second question is, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that you are saying that, you know, registrars would be maybe providing valuable input regarding the cost, but that should not be the only indicator. Is that correct? Okay. I will take these questions. I think these are important, and thanks for raising that. We'll take these questions, discuss with the study team, and see if there are potential ways that can collaborate and provide additional data. But I can't make early promises. Yeah. Thanks. I'll promise to get back to you on this and to Julie. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Steve. Do you have time for one more question, if there are any? Okay. Any more questions for Steve? Then I would like to add one thing, I think, to the point that you raised, Rudy, and this is Julie Hedlund for the transcript. I apologize, I'm not introducing myself each time I speak. And here I am supposed to be enforcing that rule. So at any rate, we will reach out to the registrars and the registry's stakeholder groups to ensure that we have representation in this working group. I think it's absolutely essential. In fact, it was, I think, lack of representation that made it so difficult for the Internationalization Registration Data Working Group to fully address this question, beyond the fact that, of course, it's a very complex question. So I do think we need full participation from the groups that might be affected by the burden of performing translation or transliteration. And so we will certainly seek to do that as staff to engage these groups. Thank you. And thank you, Steve. I think if there's no other questions, we'll let you get to your next meeting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Julie.
And at this point, this is Julie again. I want to mention also that we have another member of the charter drafting team who has joined us, Amer Alsader.
Good morning. I'm sorry I'm late.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But thank you for joining. I was wondering if it might be useful at this point, particularly for people who were not part of the drafting team, if I pulled up the draft charter, the charter that is before the council, I could put it into the Adobe Connect room, and perhaps we could just run through it and also to point out some of the questions that were more recently added in the version that went to the council. And I see some heads shaking, so I'll go ahead and pull that into the Adobe Connect room. It'll just take a couple of minutes. Thank you.
Meanwhile, Rudy speaking. Meanwhile, I think that Chris also and myself, having been the co-chairs, I would like to point out that the difficulty of producing that charter was essentially that we didn't have all the information available, and we were lucky that we had Julie helping us to go through all the difficult elements of a charter that has a lot of impact. And the first motion didn't pass due to the fact that there were some additional questions that the GNSO community wanted to add to the charter. And yesterday we had the NCSG policy committee meeting, and we agreed that we asked our councillors to vote in favor for the second version of the draft of the charter. However, during the meeting, we had also Stephanie Perrin, if I'm not wrong, from the expert working group, who has been giving some information that is quite helpful. And my question is this working group going to be allowed to have cross-communication with the expert groups so that we would be alarmed if something is going in a totally different direction? Because what I've heard yesterday is very sensible. They are using the EU as a basis for some of the discussions, what's going on in the EU, but the EU is not the whole world. And we have different regions with different legislation to cover. So I'm really wondering where this working group is going to go in the future, knowing that so many things are happening in the same domain. I don't know, Chris, maybe you have another vision.
No, I think that's I think that's a very good description of the situation that we're in. I mean, certainly when Julie goes through the document, there are some there is some drafting in there, which is actually specifically because it was leaving things open quite a lot. It was trying to give the eventual working group lots of flexibility to act. So, I think that does come through. But I'll flag up the various parts of it as they're on the screen. I think that's probably best.
And this is Julie. To the point also that Rudy has raised, I think it is absolutely essential that this PDP working group should have close communication with all of the groups that are doing anything that relates to who is, whether it has to do with internationalization or not. I think the key group is the one that Steve Shang is supporting, but there is also the expert working group that is looking at the purpose of the data registry services, and that group has now come out with another report, and that the work of this PDP also feeds into any policy that may come out of that expert working group's work. And one thing I think that's important to point out is, of the groups that are working now on Who Is Data, it is this group here, this working group that will shortly be formed, that is part of a policy development process. The expert working groups are looking at key issues that may or may not result in PDPs. And I think it is anticipated that, number one, that this working group was started first because this is a very key element of internationalization of registration data. And any policy development processes that result from the work of the expert working groups will come together with the results of this PDP. So there was some urgency in getting this PDP started first. And then I think we need absolutely close coordination and liaisons with these other groups. I think, and I don't want to speak for him, so I won't say this for sure, but Jim Galvin, who is the leader of the expert working group that's looking in the internationalization of registration data, I think is interested in joining this PDP working group, which I think would ensure very close cooperation between the groups, in addition to the fact that Steve and I are our colleagues working together, and as staff, we'll make sure that we are coordinated as well. Thank you. And so for the benefit of all of you here and also in the room, I have put the charter into the Adobe Connect room. And if you all don't mind, perhaps we could go through the charter and look at the various elements for those who may not be familiar with it. And of course, I'd be very happy to hear Chris and Rudy give their views as to how we arrived at particularly some of the questions that are in the charter. Is there anything that Rudy, you or Chris, you would like to say before I get started?
Actually, not so much about the charter. This is Chris speaking. It's more or less. It was more about the previous thing about the working group on the purpose of the data registry services. Now, for me, depending on the purpose, the costs come out of that. So there's almost a sort of hierarchy there. I mean, depending on the purposes, then you know some purposes are going to be very expensive, others are not. So for me, that's actually really key.
Thank you very much, Chris. And since we have I was going to say, since we have Amir here, I was going to see if he wanted to say anything, but he's busy at the moment. Thank you very much, Amir. I have that prerogative. So let me then turn to the charter. And so we are looking first at Section 2, and that is the mission, purpose, and deliverables. I didn't mean to give short shrift to Section 1, but we have sort of mentioned it, and that is that I don't know why this is not scrolling right, but Section 1 just talks about, essentially when it will be approved, which we've put in a preliminary date of the 20th of November. And then just to note, there will be a liaison established from the GNSO Council to this working group, and that liaison will be a likely be a counselor, but who also will be a working group member, and that is something that will be decided on Wednesday as well. But looking at Section 2, and I think what I'll do is I'll stay and keep this synced, so I'll move through it. As I mentioned previously, this PDP is the result of an issue report that was provided to the GNSO Council on 17 October 2012. There were three issues identified by the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, and that was whether it is desirable to translate contact information into a single common language or transliterate contact information into a single common script, and who should bear the burden of this translation or transliteration. And the IRD asked whether to start a PDP to address these questions. And the council did indeed decide to initiate a PDP on the 13th of June 2013. And following that, the charter drafting team was established, and that team led by Chris and Rudy and with participation from Amir and also Yoav Karen Volker Greiman established a charter. There were actually two versions of the charter, just for a little bit of background. The first one did go to the council earlier in the fall, and during that discussion, the council members of the council asked for some additional work on the charter, and that was done quite quickly in the last few weeks. And we'll point out some of the additional information that was added to the charter as part of that process. Moving to the mission and scope, the PDP working group is tasked to provide the council with a policy recommendation on the translation and transliteration of contact information. And as we noted, this will be considered by the expert working group that Steve Sheng was talking about previously. And also, in that group is working on data requirements and a data model for registration data directory services. And again, the charter reiterates the two issues that I've mentioned already. And the charter provides some background relating to the issue that text requests and content returned by who is historically were encoded using U.S. American Standard Code for Information Interchange, otherwise known as ASCII. And this was based on the English alphabet. And I'm not going to go through all of the text that's in the charter. That would be very boring, I think, for all of you. I'm assuming that you can read this and, of course, these documents. This one currently is not loaded in the Adobe Connect room, but I'll see that it is so that it is available to people remotely after the fact. But I would like to move down to some key questions. And actually, I'm going to move down to page 4 because I would like to get to the questions that were added in the most recent iteration of the charter. So I am on page 4, in the middle of the page, and I'm looking at the questions that follow the text. Finally, as part of its discussion on this first question, that working group should also consider discussing the following questions. And by the first question, that is the first issue, that is whether it is desirable to translate or transliterate contact information. So we have 5 questions that were added here. And these, I think, are to tease out a little bit more some of the complex issues involved in translation and transliteration. At this point, Now that I have these questions up, I guess I would like to see if Chris and Rudy have comments they'd like to add. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Julie. I do indeed have one of the explanations which I mentioned earlier, which I'd like to bring up at this point, and that is if you go through the earlier part of the document, what I hope is clear is that it may be that we're not looking at a binary situation where information is either translated or transliterated. Those are options, yes. But I hope this is drafted so that some parts of the information may be translated and other parts may be transliterated. I really hope that's what's coming through here, but this is a very good time to bring this up because, you know, we're just getting the options coming up so often down here, and I think it's really important to stress that. And that's effectively one of the areas where we wanted to give the working group freedom to decide which parts could fall into any of those three ways of going ahead, really.
Thank you, Chris. Rudy or Amer, now that...
This is Amer El-Sadr. Chris, that was a good point, and I think that was a very good addition to the charter. Because I think this is pointed out in one of the bullet point questions that was added, whether it was a good idea, whether it's mandatory to transliterate and or translate contact information across for everyone or just in certain geographic regions. I would like to point out a few things that I did discuss with the NCSG Policy Committee, and Rudy is right, we did recommend that this we did recommend our counselors to approve this charter. But I do have a few comments, and I would say they're borderline concerns with the way the charter, especially the additions, are drafted. And I would just like to put it on the record here now, and I hope we can convey some of this to the working group once it convenes. Well, let me start first by saying that the charter does explicitly mandate the working group to consider all other WHOIS work, and that's a good thing. And it gives quite a few examples, including the expert working group on GTLD registration services. But coming to the bullet points on page 4, which were the additions made after this had initially gone to council, and I mentioned this during the first GNSO working session, that the first question about weighing the balance between the benefit of translation and transliteration of contact information versus the cost. I personally believe that this will be a very difficult question for the working group to answer. And I feel it might not be fair to ask them to do this, although I do agree it's a very good question and it should be answered. But putting it in the charter the way it is right now, I just might expect that there might be some trouble with this. And I think this might be a good thing to bring up early on in the working group and let them know that, well, it might be just good enough to try to sort of give an estimate of this and just sort of what potentially might be the issue. But trying to really nail it down is something that I believe if we insist on, the working group might come back to us saying, well, we've tried and we lack the capacity to do this at this point. the second comment I have is regarding an addition on the next page, which is page 5, which reads, as part of its deliberation on who should decide who should bear that cost of translation/transliteration, working group members might also want to discuss who they believe should bear the cost, bearing in mind, however, the limits and scope set in the initial report of this issue. One of the mandated missions of this working group will be to decide on who decides does the translation, bears the cost of the translation and transliteration. And yet we put this in here. And I think it's understandable that some folks, especially on the council, might be concerned about what these costs might end up being and who's going to end up paying for them. And it's, but looking at these comments here, that these three lines in the charter and the new draft, I guess this is what we're asking the working group for here is just sort of an to go into a bit of an advisory role. Yeah, and because they're not, the working group per se is not going to decide who is going to bear the cost. They're going to decide who decides on bearing the cost. So, but we are asking them to deliberate on this and provide some insights based on the work they are doing. And I'm guessing that this is going to be based on the discussions on the benefits versus the costs and who the benefits will actually, who will reap the rewards of the benefits. But I just wanted to point that out, and I think it is important that members of the drafting team who hopefully do join the working group point these things out. And I think I'm good for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Amr. I think I see several people who want to speak, so I'd like to start a queue. I think Peter, you have. I have Peter. I have Chris, Rudy. So we'll go in that order. Peter, Chris, and Rudy. Peter, please.
This is Peter Dernbach from the IPC. And just a point of clarification that might be addressed by some of the co-chairs is, can the working group just address an issue more generally in terms of identifying the general benefits of this in light of the cost, acknowledging that there are costs, but not doing any kind of detailed cost-benefit analysis, because I think potentially that could be a rabbit hole that we would never come out of. So having not participated in earlier working groups, I just had a question of clarification about if that is in the charter, then the working group should address that. But could it be done more generally in identifying what the benefits are, who they appear to, who appear to reap the bulk of those benefits, and then that might inform the discussion of who should decide who should pay.
Thank you very much, Peter. Chris?
Thank you. This is Chris Dillon speaking. Yes, there seems to be quite a complicated network of interconnections here. One thing that really comes up is what the difference between the various purposes for doing this work and the benefits of it. Now, I'm hoping that those two are going to be pretty close, but for me, that's really the issue. So exactly, you know, if I mean, I suppose you might have some benefits on groups that are sort of almost side effects, but fundamentally, I guess you're looking at things which are matching with the purposes and benefiting those.
Thank you very much, Chris. Rudy?
Rudy speaking. During the last calls we had in the drafting team, we have been trying to figure out if the best approach would be to try to work with a kind of matrix which would allow to address part of your question, if we can define groups that are particularly impacted by the translation, then you could make it much easier to define also costs that are related to that group and would probably not affect other groups. So we didn't have the time to go in more in-depth in during the drafting session. And I think it's something that I would personally propose in the working group to try to start up defining a matrix with all affected groups and then try to give priority to those groups and see where do we need to have more information to be able to answer the questions, because it's not a small group we are addressing. It's a huge group of people and organizations that are going to be affected, as Chris was highlighting. My first reaction even was, and I discussed that even with Amar yesterday, something that came up in my mind as a kind of proposal that will not fit in this working group, I imagine, is wouldn't the solution not be to try to create a kind of subset of the WHIS data where you would find non-native language information, first of all, and that would be made available for specific groups, targeted groups that want to have that information, rather than making it public for everybody, that just, for instance, as a sample, law enforcement or other groups that have to look into, for instance, the intellectual property and so on, that they have the chance to go. And I'm a bit referring to the Trademark Clearinghouse sample, that you could make it easier to define what is the cost and who is going to pay for it. It's something that came up in my mind yesterday. I don't know, Chris, if you have any...
I like that approach very much. I mean, it goes back to, if the purposes coming out of the other working group were largely security purposes, that might be a really good way forward, I think.
And just to add to that is that it's a bit of reflection from what I heard yesterday also from Stephanie Perrin, who is in the expert working group for the RDS, that in fact there was also the question of should the WHIS data being spread over or is it just going to be located in one location? There were a lot of ideas and it's still not clear what way it would go. And in that purpose, having subsets would help already to say, okay, that's data that can be centralized anyhow, because it's not a huge group of data, while others maybe have to be spread, like the native language registration information should stay when it is for China, for instance, that it stays in China or in Asia. It's with that in mind that I was thinking about, what about the idea of having a subset?
Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Chris. That's a very interesting concept. Does anybody else want to comment on the thought, the suggestion that Rudy has made?
Question. Sorry, Peter? Yeah. This is Amr. Your suggestion for a possible scenario on answering the question of cost versus benefit, I personally imagine that is exactly what is going to happen once the working group starts to try to answer this question, unless we manage to attract some folks with some serious insight on how to estimate the cost of translating and transliteration of contact information. And I think that would be great if we could answer this question. I think it would be wonderful. I think it's a good question to ask. But I do imagine that the scenario you refer to on determining what the benefits are, who will enjoy them, versus some sort of cost compared to some sort of... I imagine that would be it. On Rudy's suggestion, I'm a fan of less who is, to be honest. Not more who is. I think IPC folks are great. IP, intellectual property rights are awesome. Law enforcement is awesome. But I'm more in favor of less who is across the board. More privacy and less exposure and less information. And I do imagine that, the dynamics of who is changing at the moment, it will change further once there's a PDP on the new model suggested by the expert working group on registration data. So we'll have to keep a close eye on that and see how the work of this working group will fit in there. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. I think I'm coming from the same place on that. This idea of nebulous people using information for I wouldn't know what kind of purposes is rather dreadful. No, the way forward is, you know, is certainly to stay small and stick to the purposes. And I'm certainly, although, as I say, I come from a similar place, I have no problem with doing something which, let's just take a concrete example, it's often easier. So, okay, let's imagine that we've got a company somewhere in Tokyo, and, you know, frankly, to contact them, you've got to know Japanese, otherwise you're sunk. I think it's reasonable. And I'm presuming a lot of things by saying this. I think it's reasonable that, presuming we are doing this for security reasons, that we provide tools which is just going to make it easier for people to contact them if something, whatever that's going to be, goes wrong. I have no problem with doing something like that.
Any other comments? One thing I will point out, getting back to the issue of the issue of whether or not, number one, the working group is mandated to look at the costs and benefits. It does say here that as part of its deliberation on who should decide who should bear that cost of translation and or transliteration, working group members might also want to discuss who they believe should bear the cost, bearing in mind, however, the limits and scope set by the initial report. It is not for this working group to decide who should bear the cost. And while the working group can discuss this, they may not make that determination. The issue report is quite clear on that point. And secondly, there is the study that Steve Sheng mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, and I think, Amr, I don't think you had the chance to hear all of that, but there has been a group commissioned to do a study. The contract is nearing its nearly done with the negotiations, so that work should start very soon. It is envisioned to take 6 months. That is an issue I know that, Rudy, you pointed out earlier, and that is on the feasibility of translating and transliterating contact information. One would expect that the feasibility would take into consideration the various methods that one might use to do this, and perhaps also the costs involved in using those methods. And I think, as Rudy pointed out, and Steve Sheng agreed to take back to the expert working group, is the sooner that this PDP working group can get any information on feasibility and costs, the better. Because this working group, unless it did have access to this information itself, which is unlikely, and even if we have registrars and registries participating, they may not be able to share information that might be proprietary with this working group, although they might be able to share it under a non-disclosure agreement with those conducting the study. So there might be a way to get that information. It may take some time, depending on how long the study takes. And I think that's part of the reason why this PDP was started before all the other work, because of the complexities of it and the need to take time to gather information. So, Amr, I don't know if you have questions about that, because you didn't have a chance to hear some of the things that that Steve Sheng said before you were able to join. If you don't, that's fine, but I just want to give you that opportunity. So I think there's some very interesting issues that have been raised during this discussion. I hope that it is useful, even though we don't have our official working group. There clearly is a lot to be said. We will staff move quickly to establish that working group as soon as the charter is approved. I'd like to give everyone a chance to make some more comments. We do have plenty of time. I'll start a queue. I think I saw Rudy first. I have Amr. Who else do I have in the queue? Let me start with Rudy, please.
Thank you, Julie. Rudy speaking. My first question is about timing, so that we have an indication when we are expect to start doing the work, and what would be the timing and the frequency of calls in order to be able to schedule my agenda with other discussions that are going on. I think that's something that you can probably help us most of. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll wait and let everybody speak, and then I'll try to address the questions. I have Amr, and I've got two other people in the queue, but I'll go to Amr next.
Thanks, Julie. This is Amr. I have two questions for you, actually. First, and I apologize if I've missed this, but the last draft of the charter I got was the one without Chris's suggestion of adding a question at the end on when the working group thinks this policy, if implemented, when it should be implemented. So I was hoping we could get, if we haven't already, because I looked for it, I couldn't find it. During our last call, Chris had suggested adding that a fifth bullet, I believe. So if you could circulate that, I'd appreciate it, because I couldn't find it. I think it would be helpful just to provide our counselors with the latest draft before they vote on this charter. My second question, early on in the discussions of the drafting team, we had suggested identifying elements of the contact information to be translated and transliterated, and you had suggested that there would be another PDP dedicated to this. I was just wondering when this would happen. Did you recall this? Does anyone remember this? Yeah, we had suggested adding this as an element in this charter. And Julie, if I'm not mistaken, you said that there would be a separate PDP addressing that question of what the elements are in the contact information that would be translated and transliterated. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Amr. I'll go to Chris, and then I'm taking note of all the... Oh, I'm sorry. This gentleman first. Please go ahead.
Okay, so Wanawit from Thai government. So I have some of the points that I would like to raise, because it's not only the issue, that's who do the translation. I think the experience we have, because we came from the country that not using any ASCII characters, and even though the contact information looks simple, but the problem is there are no international standards that really reference to the contact information in really a detail. For example, the geographical names, locations, even the country name and city name, there are two international standards, ISO 3166-1-2 and UN GEGN. And both of these standards refer differently. If you talk about IDN, they tend to follow the United Nations Group of Experts on Geographical Names. But when it comes to new GTLD, they follow the ISO 3166-1-2. The key point I like to raise is that the registrar or registry or the registrant giving the information and the intricacy of the information is very important. In Thailand, I can tell that even Bangkok that you know, it doesn't exist. In the United Nations Group of Expert name, they call Krung Thep, because they're using a phonics, and this is binding by law, because we have the national contact point of United Nations or Group of Experts on Geographical Names. All the road and the cities and all these, I think. And it's not only Thailand. It will affect the complex grammar structure groups like Laos, Cambodia, Burma, And even some of the Indian-based characters, because the way you spell is differently. So we know that it's our problems, and I hope that the PDP working groups are aware of how to encourage the local government to assist, because the stakeholder in one country is maybe one or two. And that's why I'm sitting here and try to learn, and how could we helping to be sure that the information that they all put it in, they don't need to do it again, so it's double the cost, and which direction we will go. So that are the points I'd like to make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are very important points. Chris?
Thank you. I'll do my thing the other way around so that it works more nicely, because I had some comments on that. I think what I would really like to say here is that validation is a huge issue, because, if you've got an address in London, the validation algorithm looks at London, goes ka-ching, it's London, no trouble. You've then got a situation like Bangkok and Krung Thep, which is much more complicated. But once you get out into the countryside, even in countries where there are standards, the government has actually decided this will be done this way, this will be done the other way. Very often you may have more than one standard. That is really common. Even in Japan, there are maybe three or four different standards. And what you actually see when people romanize place names in remote areas particularly, you actually get this horrible mixture of standards. You just wince as you look at it. Because people have got really confused. There was a really common standard that everybody used, and then the government one fine day, this happened in Korea as well, the government one fine day said, nope, we're stopping that standard, we're starting a new one, and that causes chaos. Obviously, there are then countries which have no standards at all. So what we're really talking about here is validation trouble, capital VT. And then going back to, I think it was somebody, I'm afraid I've forgotten who it was, raised the issue of timing and frequency. I think it might have been Rudy, yes. Frequency, I would certainly like to suggest that a similar approach is taken with the actual working group as we took during the charter, and that is simply that you start frequent, and then as things become more easy to manage, you drop down from once a week to twice a month to once a month, or however that would go. But I think in the early stage, probably you're going to need more meetings. And as regards timing, the fact that the cost information looks as if it's going to take a very long time to acquire may cause some delay, but fundamentally as soon as possible, I would like to suggest.
Thank you. Does anybody have anything else that they'd like to add before I address the questions and issues that have been raised? Thank you. And this is Julie Headland for the transcript. So timing, I agree with you entirely. Chris, once the working group is formed, the first task we will have is to establish timing. And I think that the group can decide weekly, bi-weekly. It's entirely up to the working group. And actually, I think the very first order of business will be to select a chair, co-chairs, vice chair, whatever, and then to set the schedule for the meetings. And then I agree, I think moving quickly to do as much as can be done whilst understanding that there'll be the study on the feasibility. I think there are plenty of other things that can be done. The matrix, I think, that Rudy mentioned. And I think also the very practical first step of establishing a timeline for deliverables and perhaps subgroups, depending on how large a working group we have, to work on various aspects to be able to split the work. We may have calls to support those subgroups That's also a possibility. We have a lot of flexibility with how we can do this. The one point I would make is that the timing is perhaps a bit unfortunate in that we will get this charter approved and then dive in December into holiday season, which is more significant for some countries than others, depending on which countries are involved. So we'll have to take that into consideration, and we may have to adjust the schedule a bit accordingly. As for the latest version of the charter, the final version that included the fifth bullet, it was sent to the drafting team, and it also is linked, or should be, and I will check to make sure this is the case, it should be linked to the motion. So the motion should have a link to the latest version, but I will check that, make sure it's correct, and I will also send that link around to the drafting team list. And as for the group that is looking at the internationalization of the various elements of all of the WHOIS data, that is actually the group that Steve Shang is supporting, led by Jim Galvin. It's actually not at a PDP stage. It is at the expert working group. It is actually developing a model for internationalizing registration data. In the internationalized registration data working group that produced the questions from which this PDP working group will be looking at, actually had also requested a data model for the internationalization of all the elements of a registration data directory service. So that would be in addition to the translation and transliteration of contact information. And I should note that contact information and those elements are actually defined in the RAA. And so when we start this working group, one of the first things we will look at it is what is contact information as defined in the RAA, and it's very specific. So we'll have to start with a very clear set of data that we will then the working group will understand is the set of data that would be considered to be translated or transliterated. And that, you know, that includes things, you know, elements of the address, and it's laid out. And I think that gets to the point, also points that have been made here about standards and that there are international standards that are not necessarily followed in different countries. I think we will very definitely need to look at existing standards, how they are applied or not, and then to Chris's point, the very, very difficult issue of validation, which to an extent crosses over into the area of purpose, the expert working group that's looking at the purpose of data, because the degree to which you say that the information you were receiving is accurate and validated may depend on your use of that information. If you're a law enforcement official, you will want it to be perfectly accurate and, you know, to be validated. If I was just out of curiosity wanting to see, which I can do now on the WHOIS with probably a low degree of accuracy depending on what I'm looking at, but if I want to see who owns a certain domain name, I can call up that information, but probably with the understanding, because I know that it's really not likely to be validated or even accurate. To some extent, I think some of the issues of validation may be outside of the scope of this working group, but the issue of validation of contact information when it is translated or transliterated, I think, is very definitely within the scope of this working group, and it's a difficult issue that this group will have to look at. I think we're all deciding here that, and I correct me if I'm wrong, that this working group will have a difficult task, a very important one, and I'm already seeing that we have a very good group. If all of you who are here are interested in participating, or at least those of you who are interested in participating, and I think we also need to make sure we get some very deep experience and broad representation in this group, which we will certainly seek to do as staff. And I encourage all of you, if you have anybody that you think might be interested in this group and have expertise that would help this working group, please let me know. Please send me names, because that will be our next task, to reach out. And when I say we'll send an announcement, staff will not just send an announcement. We will go to the people that we know in the community and say, hey, this is an important effort. Please let us know who you think might want to participate. We're getting close to time here, because I do want to let people have a chance to get to the welcome ceremony. I want to ask if anybody has any final comments or questions. Thank you.
Rudy speaking, a last question. Is there a minimum number of participants required in the working group?
Thank you, Rudy. This is Julie. There is no minimum number, but I think the charter makes it clear that this group needs to be broad. At the very least, we will seek to have a representative from each of the stakeholder groups and from each of the constituencies. We would also like to have someone from each of the supporting organizations, and the advisory committees. So that's what we'll strive to do, to have at least broad participation from all of the SOs and ACs and their constituent groups and stakeholder groups.
This is Amr. I believe that there is some sort of process involving the council. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this was discussed on the SCI, on the Standing Committee on Improvements Implementation, of whether a PDP might be suspended if it does not attract the necessary amount of participants. So I'm not sure on the details of this, but I do believe that there is some sort of process that does exist. We would have to look into it to answer Rudy's question. But if a working group or if a PDP does not attract the required number of volunteers, I believe it is the council's prerogative to suspend it.
Thank you, Amr. There is a very definite procedure in the PDP manual for suspension of a PDP. It's a fairly detailed process. A PDP cannot be suspended without a justification. There are a number of reasons that a PDP can be suspended. I don't recall if lack of participation is one of those, but if a PDP is to be suspended, the council has to give a written justification that covers a number of issues as to why that PDP is being suspended. It can't simply just disappear. But thank you for that, and we'll certainly check into that. We hope we won't come to that, because we will try very hard to get our participation, but thank you for that.
Thank you. This is Chris speaking. I think, talking about this morning, we have noticed just how many areas are in some way involved with this. There are a lot of areas. I think we should pause ourselves if we, if we cannot get vital data from a particular area, and that, effectively we get stuck. That could happen here, and so that's why the sort of outreach thing at the beginning is very, very important.
Any other comments before we close this session? I see none remotely, but I'll give everyone here any chance for a last comment. Seeing none, I do want to thank everyone here and everyone remotely for joining us today in this important meeting. And thank you very much again. Also, we will be posting the transcript and the audio link to this node on the ICAM meeting schedule. And I will say from Julie Headland that this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.